Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Mastering Defence Infrastructure. I'm Jason Marshall from Elevate Consulting Engineers, and I'm here with my co-founder, Sean Whitfield, to give you the lowdown on what is cumulatively one of the largest components of the defence estate. I'm talking about the road infrastructure that provides access to defence's training areas and ranges.
Thanks, Jason. G'day, everyone. Before we jump in, it's probably a good idea to explain who we are. I started out in a regional town and worked my way up to drafting, design, and eventually managing my own projects in remote communities. And Jason, you have what, 3 decades in civil engineering?
That's right. I've spent most of my career specializing in designing and managing civil infrastructure projects for councils, state governments, and most recently, defence.
And I think a lot of what we do at Elevate comes from that mix. So your technical precision and my boots on the ground experience working with people, often in some pretty isolated places.
Defence training area infrastructure, things like unsealed roads, might not sound glamorous, but they're absolutely mission critical. We're going to share our thoughts, experiences, and some real lessons learned that aren't just about engineering, but about making smarter investments that benefit everyone.
Yeah, like those dirt roads that get smashed by heavy vehicles but still have to hold their own day after day. All right, so unsealed roads on defence training areas and ranges. Jason, these aren't just any roads, right? They're built to meet some pretty unique requirements.
Yeah, you're spot on, Sean. In training areas, unsealed roads are the backbone of troop movement, logistics, and emergency response. They may not have the polish of a highway, but their reliability under tough conditions is what makes them indispensable.
But they're often out there in the middle of nowhere, right? I mean, these are remote, rugged terrains. If they're not built or maintained properly, what happens?
Well, that's when the problems really start. Roads like these sometimes take a pounding from heavy armored vehicles and convoys, and if they're not open when you need them, you're looking at missed training objectives and even safety risks. And
Okay, so minimum viable capability is a term that gets thrown around during the design of new infrastructure projects. Break that down for me because it sounds kind of hard to get right.
it's all about balance. And MVC means designing a road to meet just what's necessary for defence needs, no less, no more. So instead of over-engineering a road to handle everything, you figure out the minimum standard that keeps it functional and cost-effective over its lifespan. For example, do you need a fully sealed surface, or can a properly designed and maintained gravel road do the job?
Makes a whole lot of sense. They go cheap up front, you could end up paying down the road, literally. Keep it smart and calculated.
Exactly. And I actually remember this one project early in my career. I was out in remote Queensland inspecting a stretch of makeshift road that kept getting damaged after the heavy rains. It kept turning to mush because the drainage wasn't handled well. We had to figure out a way to stabilize it without any real resources at hand. So let's just say pulling that off involved some, creative thinking.
Wait, so what's creative exactly?
Yeah, well, we used locally sourced crushed rock, pre-compacted the surface, and diverted water with side drains. It wasn't perfect, but it held up well enough for vehicle movement when it mattered. That's what MVC is about, building just enough resilience into a road so it works when it's needed, especially in these harsh environments. So,
Man, I bet those trucks were grateful. I mean, can you imagine being out there, convoy stalled, not moving an inch? It's a nightmare scenario for defence logistics.
Absolutely. It's the logistical and operational chaos. And that's why understanding the concept of MVC, building it right the first time, saves time, money, and resources later. It's also why unsealed roads deserve more attention than they usually get.
All right, so on that note, I've got a question for you. How do we actually figure out what's just enough for these roads? I mean, there's got to be some science behind how you decide what's good enough and what's not.
There absolutely is, and that's a great lead into our next discussion. Though modern technology like 3D LiDAR scanning and AI-driven tools are completely changing how we monitor and assess road conditions, it's letting us get ahead of problems before they show up. All right, Sean, let's talk about condition assessments. These days, it's all about the tech, isn't it? We've moved way past the days of just walking the road with a clipboard in hand.
That's right. For example, 3D LiDAR scanners for surveying. Amazing stuff. Why don't you explain what makes it such a game changer?
Absolutely. LiDAR, light detection and ranging, uses laser pulses to create incredibly detailed three-dimensional models of the road and surrounding terrain. Mounted on a vehicle or even a drone, it can scan hundreds of kilometers in just a day, capturing data down to millimeter accuracy. For defense roads, that means we can detect potholes, erosion, or poor drainage spots before they become big problems.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When you're out in places like Soldash Air Weapons Range, where I've done projects, getting humans to inspect these roads regularly is tough. So a vehicle mounted with LiDAR, that can save a fortune. You know, you just send the guys out, they collect the data by the kilometre and saves you tons of time and effort.
Exactly. And it's not just about finding the issues, it's about mapping them too. You know, when you pair LiDAR with AI-driven tools like platforms that analyze the data automatically, you can prioritize issues. It flags the roughest sections and predicts where failures are likely. It can even suggest maintenance schedules. You're no longer reacting to emergencies, you're preventing them.
That's impressive. So the AI tells you like, hey, this section's about to go bad, fix it now or pay later.
Exactly like that. It's predictive, which is a massive shift. I mean, remember when we used to judge road conditions just by driving over them and saying, yep, that feels rough, you know, and then you'd have to get out and manually survey it. Now it's all data driven. You know, local governments are even using these tools to optimize budgets because it shows where money spent will get the highest return.
I love that. Practical savings and fewer surprises. But, you know, Jason, the real beauty of this tech, you can use it even in remote spots where things like logistics make traditional inspections almost impossible.
Can you share an example?
All right. So we were working on, setting up some access roads in Kawanyama, very isolated up on Cape York. And we had no way to check the condition of some of the tracks after a storm. So we started using drones to survey them. It wasn't LiDAR back then, just high-res cameras. The data helped us figure out where to shore up crossings before the real heavy vehicles came through. It's like using a bird's eye view to get ahead of the chaos.
That's such a great example. And it really shows how adaptable these tools are. And depending on the budget or the need, you can scale from basic imaging to full 3D mapping. What's exciting today is how quickly this tech is evolving, especially for defense projects where reliability is critical. Drones, satellites, AI, they're all working together to help us make smarter decisions.
Right. And even with those basics, you know, you could still avoid some of the massive failures we see today, like roads just washing away. Jason, where do you see this tech heading in, say, 5 years?
Honestly, I think we'll see even more integration, sensors embedded in roads themselves, real-time data feeds directly to command centers, and maybe even autonomous drones deployed after storms to give instant updates. Imagine a future where we know which roads need fixing before anyone leaves range control. That's where we're heading, and it's an exciting frontier for defense infrastructure management.
Exciting, right? I'd love to see this tech used more out in the bush where distances are huge and manpower is limited. Anyway, all this talk about technology has got me thinking, what about old-fashioned resilience, floodways and gravel choices? That's still half the battle, right?
Exactly, Sean. Tech helps monitor, but resilient design is where it all begins. And that brings us to some pretty interesting strategies for handling extreme weather, especially here in Northern Australia. Resilience is the foundation. And for defence roads, especially in Northern Australia, it's absolutely critical. With the wet season bringing unpredictable weather extremes, unsealed roads can quickly shift from being robust pathways to rivers or complete quagmires. So, let's dive into some strategies that tackle these challenges head on. So,
exactly. And for anyone who hasn't been up there, the wet season isn't just a couple weeks of drizzle. It's a total game changer. If the roads aren't up for it, everything just stops. Supplies, vehicles, even emergency evacuations, it's all off the table. So, Jason, what's the strategy? Where do you even start?
You start with designing around the idea that water will win every single time. It's all about drainage, getting water off the road and away from it as quickly as possible. That's where floodways come in. They're these reinforced sections that let water flow over the road without washing it out.
I've seen those floodways in action. Sometimes they're the only reason a road even survives up north, but it's not just about the techie design, right? Now you've got to think big picture too, things like using the ground material itself smarter.
Absolutely. Things like geosynthetics or stabilization agents can make a huge difference. A good example is using geogrids under soft sections. They stop the road from collapsing into the mud when it's loaded with, say, an armored convoy. It's such a simple addition, but it saves thousands in repairs every wet season.
That's gold. And you know what? It reminds me of Bradshaw Field Training Area, seeing how Indigenous contractors were involved there. And I don't just mean on the tools. I mean real decision making. It shows how thinking local can change the game. Jason, you remember those 16 floodways they put in, right?
I do. That approach was smart, targeting the crossings that consistently flooded so the rest of the road stayed functional. And to your point about local engagement, Bradshaw's a standout example of doing it right. Partnering with the traditional owners under their ILUA wasn't just about ticking a box. It's why the project succeeded. The locals know that land better than anyone.
Exactly. And for me, it's personal. You know, back when I was working with communities in Queensland, there was this sense of pride you could feel when people were actual stakeholders, not just hired hands. I remember putting together a road crew from a small community near Woorabinda. We worked on those access tracks through culturally sensitive sites and cattle country. It wasn't just a job for the guys. It was about making country accessible while preserving its story.
That's what makes these projects more than just infrastructure. Mm. When you build those relationships, you're not only improving the area, but creating a sense of ownership. It's exactly what makes the Bradshaw model so brilliant. Indigenous enterprises like Bradshaw Contracting aren't just maintaining the roads. They're protecting cultural and environmental values too. It just works.
Couldn't have said it better. And look, you've got to admit, it's a win-win. Defence gets more reliable infrastructure and the community gets meaningful, lasting opportunities. I tell you what, Jason, if I could bottle what worked at Bradshaw and spread it across every training area in Australia, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
It's a template worth replicating, no doubt. But it's not just the big projects. Small steps matter too. Training, employment targets, even consultation during the design phase, it all adds up. And as we think about the bigger picture, let's talk through some of the key recommendations raised in the white paper. I think that's where it all ties together. Sean, reflecting on what we've just explored, it's clear that seeing roads as more than just infrastructure is crucial. Take Bradshaw as an example. It's not just about clever engineering. Defence roads are lifelines, and success comes from the preparation, partnerships, and long-term thinking that underpin them. Let's break down how we tie all this together moving forward.
Spot on, mate. It's about asking yourself, what do we leave behind? Are we setting up robust systems? Are we building relationships with local communities, or just ticking boxes? When I think about the projects we've worked on, the ones that succeeded weren't just about materials and designs. They had heart. They included people.
Absolutely. That's the core message of the white paper. It's more than a technical guide. It's a roadmap for smarter, more sustainable planning. The key points are, first, focus investment on high stress areas. Second, use technology to anticipate maintenance needs. And third, partner with Indigenous businesses wherever you can. It all comes back to one principle: build with the future in mind.
I'm into that. And if there's one thing I learned from Bradshaw, it's this. When you invest in the people who live and breathe the land, the results go beyond what anyone could dictate on paper. It's community-led solutions that make the absolute difference.
Couldn't agree more. And for everyone listening, whether you're in defence engineering or just interested in smarter infrastructure, this white paper is a must read. It's packed with practical recommendations, real world case studies, and innovative insights that can transform how we think about low volume roads.
And hey, if you want to dive deeper, here's how you can get involved. Head on over to elevateengineers.com.au. That's where you can download the full white paper. You'll also find us on LinkedIn, where we're keen to connect and keep the conversation going. We want your stories, your ideas, your challenges. Let's make this a two-way street, so to speak.
That's a perfect way to put it, Sean. And look, 5 years of Elevate Consulting Engineers has taught us one thing. Collaboration makes all the difference. We're here because of the support from our peers, clients, and communities. And we hope this discussion inspires others to keep building smarter, more resilient solutions together.
Couldn't have said it better, Jason. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Until next time, keep those ideas flowing and those roads solid. Catch you later.